The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Oh, we made it to a Friday. Yes. And it's Good Friday for those of you who that means something to. To me, any Friday is a Good Friday, but it is Good Friday. It's also, I guess tonight is the first night of Passover as well. So for those of you who celebrate whatever religious holidays you do, happy or whatever you say. I don't think you say happy Passover. So happy whatever holiday you celebrate. And for those like me who don't, it's just another Good Friday. Happy Friday. It's a good day for people who care about justice. Let me see if I can't find this. There's the Town Hall Project has confirmed. Oh no, that's the wrong thing I'm looking at. Sorry. A bunch of town halls coming up, but that goes hand in hand with the people who are trying to get Laura Ingraham to do the right thing. And 13 or now 14 companies have officially dumped their ads from Laura Ingraham's show. They include the movie Chappaquiddick, Atlantis in the Bahamas, Expedia, Hulu, Jenny Craig, Johnson & Johnson, Joseph A. Banks, Liberty Mutual, Nestle's, Nutriche, Stitch Fix, TripAdvisor, Wayfair, and I just read somewhere Office Depot is the latest one to add to the list of companies that have pulled their advertising from Laura Ingraham's television show on Fox for basically bullying a kid. She went after 17-year-old David Hogg because he's having trouble getting into his colleges of choice with like a 4.2 GPA. You know, when I was a kid, you couldn't get over a 4.0. Not that I was anywhere near a 4.0. But when I was a kid, my whatever I had, 3.5 or thereabouts, was good enough to get me into any Florida State University I wanted to go to. That's not the case now. And I guess David Hogg wants to go to school in California, where he's originally from. He used to live in the Los Angeles area, and so he's trying to get into UCLA. And rather than cheering these kids on, Laura Ingraham picks on him. And now that, advertisers are pulling out of her show, all of a sudden, in the interest of Holy Week, she's trying to do the right thing. Well, it's too little, too late, Laura. And companies are dropping off like flies, and that's a good thing. The only better thing would be if she got fired, although I don't think this will rise to that. What else? You know, something else that happened yesterday that I didn't really talk about much is the whole replacing of the VA secretary, David Shulkin, with Trump's personal physician. I'm going to share with you an editorial that's in the New York Daily News, if I can find, here it is, by Brandon Friedman. Now, Brandon Friedman used to work for the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs from 2009 to 2012. He served as the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs at the Housing and Urban Development as well. And, you know, this is a short piece, but he got it right. So here's what he wrote. On Wednesday afternoon, I started getting text messages from people I'd served with at the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs. Wait, one read, his White House doctor? LOLOL. To anyone who knows anything about the VA, that's the reaction you'd expect given the news, but it really isn't funny. Minutes earlier, the president had announced by tweet that he had fired the VA secretary and selected his personal White House doctor, Rear Admiral Ronnie Jackson, to lead the department. Jackson is, by most accounts, a decent man and well-qualified physician. He served in the Obama White House, and staffers for both Trump and Obama speak highly of him. He has a distinguished military career, to include leading a forward-deployed surgical shock trauma platoon in Iraq. But that's it. He has no policy experience. He has no political experience. Even more importantly, he doesn't have the management experience to take on the VA. Let's look at the numbers. VA exists to serve more than 20 million U.S. veterans. Its healthcare system alone has about 8 million veterans enrolled for care. That same healthcare system has more than 1,100 facilities across the country. This doesn't include the millions more veterans receiving VA disability benefits or attending school on the VA-managed GI Bill. VA also runs America's 135 national cemeteries. The department has 370,000 employees and a $187 billion annual budget. But VA is more than numbers. It's about people. Veterans commit suicide at a higher rate than civilians. They face greater challenges than their civilian counterparts when searching for jobs in their 20s. And they require specialized medical care from a bureaucracy that can't typically meet demand. These aren't challenges Jackson has ever faced, let alone solved. He has never, he has never managed more than several dozen people. I mean, let that sink in for a second. He's never managed more than several dozen people, and this agency has more than 370,000 employees. Sorry, back to the text. And the president of the United States, who won election in no small part by touting his own private sector management credentials, wants to put him in charge of America's second largest federal agency. This nomination is not only an insult to veterans, it's also disrespectful to taxpayers. Jackson should know better than to accept it. And if he does, the Senate should not vote to confirm him. I can appreciate the desire for an outsider or fresh eyes, but we're talking here about a bureaucracy that in recent years chewed up a former Army chief of staff and the CEO of Procter & Gamble, a $127 billion company. Trump is setting Jackson up for failure, and in doing so, he's setting up America's veterans for the same. If the president really wants to find the right person to lead the VA, he'd need someone who understands veterans, who has managed a budget of at least, say, $10 billion, and led at least 50,000 employees, and they'd have to be willing to work for less than $200,000 a year. That's not easy. Few Americans meet that criteria. But if the White House cared even a little about veterans and the stewardship of taxpayer dollars, they'd at least make an effort to find that right person. Picking your personal doctor because he says nice things about you on TV is no way to run the government. Again, this is from Brandon Friedman. He's the founder and CEO of Rakuten Tea Company, who also worked for the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs from 2009 to 2012 and served as the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development from 2014 to 2015. He's on Twitter at BFriedmanDC. He's a smart guy. And he got it spot on. This whole would be a joke if it were funny, but there's nothing funny about this. David Shulkin, who was the outgoing Secretary of Veterans Affairs, was on CNN with Anderson Cooper last night.
You know Dr. Ronnie Jackson, the man who President Trump tapped to replace you. I want to read you something that John Brennan, the former CIA director, tweeted about him today. Quote, I personally know and greatly respect Ronnie Jackson as a terrific doctor and Navy officer. However, he has neither the experience nor the credentials to run the very large and complex VA. This is a terribly misguided nomination that will hurt both a good man and our veterans. Is he right?
Well, I also know Dr. Jackson. He's a friend of mine. I have considerable respect for him. He's a great public servant. And I will do everything that I can to help Dr. Jackson succeed in this position. This is a tough position. There's no doubt about it. This is one of the most complex organizations anywhere to run.
This is a huge management role here. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of employees, hundreds
of thousands
of customers.
Yeah, we're talking about 375,000 employees, a budget of close to $200 billion next year, and a very complex organization. And so it is going to be a challenge for anybody to take. Fortunately, we have a process that we go through where Senate confirmation is required, where all these questions will be brought out. But look, I have confidence that Dr. Jackson is a person who is honorable and cares about our veterans.
But can somebody without management experience, whether it's Dr. Jackson or somebody else, someone without managing a large organization, as you say, hundreds of thousands of employees, can they do this job?
No.
This is a tough job for anybody to do. What the successful secretary needs to do is to build a team around them, because this is bigger than any one person, and to work very collaboratively with veteran service organizations and Congress.
It's daunting, to say the least. I'll tell you, though, as disconcerting as all that is, probably the worst thing that I heard was on All In with Chris Hayes. David Shulkin was on, and he talked about how he found out he was being fired. Hold on to your seats, because this will blow your mind.
When's the last time you spoke to him?
I spoke to the president yesterday.
What was that conversation like?
We spoke about the progress that I was making, what I needed to do from a policy perspective to make sure that we were fixing the issues in VA. Very focused. He was very inquisitive about the things that we were working on, making sure that we were focused on the job at hand.
Wait, that's before you were fired?
That's correct.
You spoke to him. He made no mention of the fact that he was about to terminate you?
That's correct.
And then you found out via tweet.
Right before that, the chief of staff, Kelly, gave me a call, which I appreciated, gave me a heads up. And so but that was much after the phone call.
He spoke to the president the day he was fired. The president made no hint of the fact that he was going to be fired. He just talked like business as usual. And then a couple hours later, moments before the tweet came out, he gets a call from chief of staff John Kelly saying, oh, by the way, you're going to be fired in a couple of minutes via Twitter. We are living in the Twilight Zone. We are living in this alternate universe where nothing makes sense, nothing at all. The least of which is all the stuff going on with our data and how they're stealing elections. And one of the best people that I know on the subject, of course, is Greg Pallas. Greg Pallas is going to join us today. But before we get to him, though, we'll do what's news. One last bit of news. The wife of the shooter at the Pulse nightclub was found not guilty of conspiracy and whatever, I forget what other charges she was up on. But she was found, I thought I had the story up here, but I don't. She was found not guilty on all counts. So I guess the shooter is dead and nobody else will be charged in that Pulse nightclub shooting. I don't know what's happening to our world today, people. I think we are just, it's all jumped the shark. Anyway, let's check in with what's news, and we'll come back on the other side with Greg Pallas next on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced Thursday that he will not appoint a second special counsel to investigate allegations of surveillance abuse within the DOJ, despite pressure from the Republican Party for him to do so. MSNBC's Katie Turr explains.
Sessions is not going to appoint a second special counsel to investigate FISA practices. What does that say to you? The attorney general says it's just not going to happen.
Well, first, it says that he's a man of more principle than maybe people like me expected, because this is clearly the right decision, not the politicized decision. But I think it might also indicate, and I want to emphasize might, that he realizes that his days are numbered and that he's kind of dead man walking at the Justice Department, because you know what's going to happen on the Trump propaganda channel and in the House Republican caucus after this news. They're going to go nuts over this, and I think they probably will demand Jeff Sessions' head, and you could see somebody like Scott Pruitt coming in as Attorney General.
Bring us up to speed one more time, though, and tell us why House Republicans wanted this special counsel.
Well, House Republicans feel that the Justice Department and the special counsel process has not been fair to the president, especially since Republicans control all of Washington. There has been this feeling among the base that Trump is getting kind of an unfair shake with all of this, and they want to be focusing on other things, particularly Hillary Clinton. You still hear that among Republicans. I think what's interesting about Sessions, though, I almost take a lot of his behavior lately as a way to kind of dare Trump to fire him, knowing that if Trump does, that would spark a constitutional crisis, that it would only further, you know, problems for the administration. We saw him be kind of defiant. And also, it's notable that he was on the cover of Time magazine this week, sure to get a reaction out of Trump.
Advertisers have begun fleeing from Laura Ingraham's Fox TV show after she mocked Parkland shooting survivor David Hogg for not getting into any of his chosen colleges. In response to her criticism, Hogg launched a boycott of her advertisers, with a number of them pulling out of her show. Hogg appeared on CNN's New Day Friday morning.
At our latest count, there's been 7 advertisers that have pulled out of Laura Ingraham's show after 1 tweet from you. I mean, it seems like you have a lot of power at the moment, and I'm just wondering how you feel about all of this.
I think it's great that corporate America is standing with me and the rest of my friends, because when you come against any one of us, whether it be me or anybody else, you're coming against all of us. And I think it's important that we stand together as both corporate and civic America to take action against these people and show them that they cannot push us around, especially when all we're trying to do here is save lives. And when people try to distract, like Laura's trying to do right now, from what the real issue here is, which is gun violence in America, it's not only sad, it's just wrong. From a journalistic standpoint, I would say that she needs to be more objective and needs to stand down, because I am not the issue here. The issue needs to be gun violence in America, but what she's trying to do is to distract from that, and I hate it.
Listen, she's a talk show host. She's not objective. I mean, her point isn't even to be objective. She has a particular position. She's a conservative. But listen, after the advertisers started pulling out, she did issue an apology to you. I'll read it to everyone. Any student should be proud of a 4.2 GPA, including David Hogg. On reflection, in the spirit of Holy Week, I apologize for any upset or hurt my tweet caused him or any of the brave victims of Parkland. For the record, I believe my show was the first to feature David immediately after that horrific shooting, and even noted how poised he was given the tragedy. As always, he's welcome to return to the show anytime for a productive discussion. Do you accept her apology?
No. She's only apologizing after a third of her advertisers pulled out. And I think it's really disgusting, the fact that she basically tried promoting her show after apologizing to me. I think it's wrong, and I think if she really wants to do something, she could cover things like inner city violence and the real issues that we have in America. I know she's a talk show host, but as such, she also has a responsibility to show both sides of a story, you know?
The Washington Post reporting Friday that the White House was thrown on the defensive over the president's choice of Ronnie L. Jackson to lead the Department of Veteran Affairs, forcing officials to fend off mounting skepticism that the admiral, a career naval officer who was an emergency trauma doctor in Iraq before spending the last 12 years as a White House physician, lacks the type of management experience expected from the leader of an agency that employs 360,000 people and has a $186 billion annual budget. Outgoing VA Secretary David Shulkin appeared on All In with Chris Hayes on Thursday night to explain the odd circumstances of his firing.
When's the last time you spoke to him?
I spoke to the president yesterday.
What was that conversation like?
We spoke about the progress that I was making, what I needed to do from a policy perspective to make sure that we were fixing the issues in VA. Very focused. He was very inquisitive about the things that we were working on, making sure that we were focused on the job at hand.
Wait, that's before you were fired?
That's correct.
You spoke to him. He made no mention of the fact that he was about to terminate you?
That's correct.
And then you found out via tweet?
Right before that, the chief of staff, Kelly, gave me a call, which I appreciated, gave me a heads up. And so but that was much after the phone call. I got the
news. And that's a bit of What's News for Now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener funded, and I really can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
You're listening to the Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right, we are back, and I'm always excited to speak with my next guest. Greg Palast is the author of several New York Times bestsellers, including The Best Democracy, Money Can Buy, and Armed Madhouse. You know him through his investigative reports for BBC Television, The Guardian, Democracy Now!, and Rolling Stone. Greg released the post-election update of his film, The Best Democracy, Money Can Buy, The Case of the Stolen Election. You can get it on Amazon and stream it on Prime or at gregpalast.com. And Greg Palast joins us now. Hello, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Okay, happy holidays.
Oh, well, thank you, those who celebrate those kind of things. So, Greg Palast, you have a...
It's Trump-mas, isn't it?
It's Trump-mas? It's Trump-mas. Yes, okay. Letting you say happy Trump Day again.
Right,
or something
yeah.
like that.
That's crazy fat guy coming down the chimney.
Oh, God.
With big okay, ears. Go ahead. Sorry, Nicole. I'm just in one of those moods.
That's okay.
All right.
I am, too.
Well, the empire is collapsing, but you have to make a few jokes about it. All right.
Always, because, you know, if we don't laugh occasionally, we know what the alternative is, and it ain't pretty. And some of us have been doing that all too much in the last year and a few months. So,
yeah.
And things aren't getting any better, are they?
No, things are getting worse, and that's one of the things I'm very, very concerned about. There's some bad doings afoot. So, which of the evils should we start with?
Well, you know, we've been hearing so much about Cambridge Analytica over the last few days, but you have a piece up at gregpalast.com that says Cambridge Analytica ain't nothing. Look out for I360 and Data Trust. What are I360 and Data Trust?
Yeah, if Cambridge Analytica puts you in a bad mood, then I360 and Data Trust are going to give you nightmares. Cambridge Analytica, despite its highfalutin name and Steve Bannon being its former director with his pseudo-intellectual BS, they're the amateurs in the field. They're dangerous amateurs, they commit fraud. They use fraud to get your Facebook profiles, about 25 million by last estimate. But remember that Facebook profiles, you kind of make public, and that's full of your baloney that you say about yourself. I mean, they can use that to manipulate you, but nevertheless. And of course, they provide other functions. For example, they do offer the service of hooking up your political opponents with hookers and taping them. That's one of their offers.
One.
And one of the others is that Cambridge Analytica will also provide fake news about your opponents. So Trump, with his fake news shout, actually hired the company that is literally offering for a price to create fake news that they say will leave no fingerprints of their involvement.
Wow.
But okay, that's bad enough. Now get ready for worse. Okay, I360 and also goes by the name of Themis. And that is a company that's far more sophisticated. It doesn't just read your Facebook profile. It tracks you on Facebook, but it tracks you for 1,800 behaviors on a continuous basis, from your credit card purchases, your cable TV choices, 1,800 moving data
wow.
points dynamically. And, for example, in my film, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, I have an expert who works with Amazon and eBay and others, who is an expert in this stuff. And he even says he uses these databases, but he says it's creepy when it comes to politics because they know, for example, if you've downloaded porn and ordered Chinese food before you voted. And that's dangerous stuff in many ways. And by the way, do you know who founded and funded I360 Themis?
Well, I do because I read your piece.
Okay, it's that four-letter word Coke, the Coke brothers.
The Coke brothers.
So no points for those trying to guess. Then there's the next one, which is called Data Trust. Mm. And don't trust them because that Data Trust is is run by a guy named, who's known as Bush's brain. Bush called him Turd Blossom, and is otherwise known as Karl Rove.
Right.
And a true vote-thieving creepster. And I don't say that just, you know, I don't throw that stuff off. This is based on my investigations for The Guardian and Rolling Stone. And a data trust run by Karl Rove is also tracking you, again, older and much more sophisticated than Cambridge, maybe not up to the Koch's devious operation. But it's how they use this stuff. And let me just give you one example from Data Trust Karl Rove, whose main client, by the way, is the Republican National Committee. Uh-huh. They use their databases, and this goes way back to 2004 when they were nascent, to do a trick where they use their databases to find out who is registered to vote at a place where they are temporarily and legally gone, but still a legal voter. Black students at black colleges, mm-hmm. You know, traditionally black colleges, on vacation for the summer, but they're legally registered, say, at the Florida State University, whatever. They went after African-American and Hispanic naval airmen at the Jacksonville Naval Air Station.
Wow.
These are guys who are in Iraq, in Afghanistan. They're based abroad. But they vote from their naval, from the Navy base. That's where they're registered to vote. They send them letters to these addresses, the students, the airmen who are away from their legal addresses, with the note, do not forward. That's data trust. And then the return address is Republican National Committee. They send those letters, which are now undeliverable because they say do not forward to Iraq or to your parents' home for the summer. And the RNC challenges you. The letters come back, and they literally go into a physical cage. They're open there, and then they say that's evidence that this voter doesn't exist. You get challenged. Now, you, especially if you're a soldier abroad, you send in mail in your ballot, and you don't know you've been challenged. You can't challenge the challenge, and your mail-in ballot gets thrown in the garbage. This is one of the main ways that George Bush, for example, won re-election in 2004. And by the way, John Kerry, who read my book, Our Madhouse, mm-hmm. after reading that, finally said, yes, they stole the election from me. Finally.
Wow.
And it took him a long time, you know, to come around. But he had to see the evidence, which is fair, and I gave it to him. Now, that's data trust. I-360, here's some of their tricks. One of their spin-off, one of their operators, used their database to find out in Wisconsin during the Scott Walker recall that who is a gun owner, lives in a rural area, normally votes by absentee ballot. They sent them notes saying, protect your gun, vote, mail in your ballot, make sure that you mail in your ballot to this address by this date. The address was wrong. And the date was too late for you to get your vote counted. So they were deliberately using their databases to figure out who they could misinform about the vote. That was to get – now, that worked in Wisconsin. Then they moved it to the swing state of North Carolina. Now, by the way, they got caught, and they said in Wisconsin, they said, we made a mistake. Really? Okay, then they went to North Carolina, and they made the mistake again with about 200,000 people. Then they rolled it across the South for the 2016 election, the Southeast. And, they keep making those very strategic mistakes that's always eliminating votes of misleading Democratic voters. It is, by the way, if it's not a mistake, it's a felony crime. But, of course, that means that you have to get Jeff Beauregard Sessions to bust this crime. Good luck. So in other words, Cambridge Analytica is not some bad apple, okay? It is part of a wave. And then, of course, we have Steve Bannon's buddy and Donald Trump's vote thief in chief, Kris Kobach,
yes,
the Secretary of State of Kansas, who also is using databases. There's your fourth one. And he's created this database, two databases, one called CrossCheck, which we've discussed prior. We've had it in my film where I confront this guy with where he says, Donald Trump says 3 million people have voted twice. Kris Kobach repeats it. Well, I'm the only journalist. By the way, if you're listening, Greg Palast talking excitedly. I'm the only journalist who actually got a hold of the list, mainly because they they tell you no, but, you know, I'm an investigative reporter, so I get the list anyway. I was working for Rolling Stone. And so I got their millions of names of double voters, and their names like Maria Cristina Hernandez, supposed to be the same voter as Maria Inez Hernandez, voting twice in two states on the same election. Now, you say, Maria Hernandez, that's a common name. Mm-hmm. Not for a Republican. So this is a list of common names. That's all it is. Most 2 million middle, 2 million of the middle names don't match, by the way. Forget
that
birthdays
doesn't matter
or anything
to
else.
Them. Right.
And they say it's the same voter. It's nonsense. This is one of their databases. And now, last week, the ACLU sued over another Kobach database to pick out alien voters on the voter rolls, which is a program he uses, a database in which they go through the voter rolls. A guy named Jesse Richmond created this for him, and find un-American names like Garcia Hernandez, Chung Wong,
right,
you
right.
get it. And they asked, the ACLU asked a Kobach expert, and this is no joke, because remember, this program is going to roll out by 2018-20 nationwide, is the name Carlos Murguia a suspected non-citizen voter? And they said, oh, yes. They said, do you know that Carlos Murguia is born in Kansas City, and he's the judge in the next courtroom? This is what they are doing with the databases. So don't think that Cambridge Analytica is just one bad boy, and that somehow, because Facebook let them run amok, that you fix that and you're all happy now. Forget it.
So, Greg Palast, what happened with this ACLU lawsuit?
Well, we're still waiting for the results, but here's the thing. The ACLU sued, here's how Kobach used the list. Once he identified the un-Americans, he challenges their right to vote. And specifically what he did in Kansas, he said before, because he's found, he says, using these programs, he's found all these non-citizens voting. By the way, why don't they arrest them?
Right.
They don't, because it is a crime, right? Arrest them and deport them. They don't, because they don't exist. So what they're saying is, when you register to vote in Kansas, you have to prove you're a citizen. Sorry, no driver's license. My Swiss assistant, my Swiss investigator has a driver's license. She has a Social Security card. No, it has to be your original birth certificate or a passport. Now, who has passports, okay? What color are the people who hold passports? Who has their original birth certificate? So 36,000 people, most of them young people, under the age of 25, students at the University of Kansas Lawrence, were denied the right to vote, 36,000. Kobach could not identify a single one as a non-citizen, but he blocked them from voting because they didn't have that passport. And the ACLU sued, and they just had a trial. And two things happened. One, Kobach, by the way, was his own lawyer.
Right.
So he had a fool for a client.
Uh-huh.
And he was a disaster in the courtroom. The judge is really angry, to the point where now, in addition to violating court orders, he's now also facing contempt charges, which could actually get him fined or even thrown in jail. He doesn't care. He's running for governor as Trump's love child. And, you know, for him, it's just good publicity to say, oh, the ACLU is attacking me. And but he's going to lose. The judge made it clear that not only is she going to issue an order saying that Kobach's law is requiring people to prove they're citizens is nonsense and partisan and racist and unfair. She's going to fine him at least, if not put him in the clink for a little while for contempt.
Good.
But here's it, you say, well, everything's fine now. Forget about it. He knows. He's taking it to the United States Supreme Court, the Roberts Gorsuch black-robed inquisitors, who are more than happy to endorse this idea of requiring citizenship. This is the court that allowed Indiana to include photo ID. Once Indiana got the Supreme Court endorsement, it went to 30 states. Once Kobach gets the endorsement for citizenship proof, 30 states, and you can kiss off 2020, because it'll be Trump, probably Donnie Jr. will be president if that law goes through.
God.
I'm just telling you, these databases combined with the vote suppression tactics and new voting rules, you combine those two things, and you don't have a democracy anymore.
No, this is really frightening. Everything you're reporting on is frightening. The only hope is this ACLU lawsuit that Kobach loses. But even then, are we too dug into this to crawl out of it? I mean, it used to be.
Yeah, I'm just afraid. Yeah, I'm afraid we're just that he's going to take it to the Supreme Court. That's why he's so smug. You know, throw the gavel at me. You know, lock me up. I'm going to be governor of Kansas, and I am the chief advisor on voting rights to Donald Trump. I mean, just so you know, Kobach, we just went through this controversy now, this whole hoo-ha about requiring people to say if you on the census form if you have non-citizens in your household.
I wanted to ask about that.
That comes from the same guy, Chris Kobach of Kansas. By the way, if you can't remember his name, just remember KKK, Chris Kobach of Kansas.
Oh.
And watched my film, and you'll see me. He wouldn't talk to me, so I went in a bit of a disguise and jumped him with my camera crew. But, this guy's a serious, damaging piece of work, and he is rewriting all these laws for Trump, including this was his idea to put the question on the census form. Everyone's talking about how it will discourage people from filling out the census
sure.
form. In places like California, New York, which is the idea. But that's the secondary idea. What they're missing is Kobach's idea was to use the census form to once again, if you say you have a non-citizen in your household, he's going to use all the names in your household, check it against the voter rolls. He said this is what he's going to do, just so you know. I'm not making it up. He said, check the names on the from the census, check them on the voter rolls. If you will be challenged for being a possible non-citizen voter. They don't take off your name immediately. He'll point that out. They'll send you a card. You know, most people just chuck these postcards, you know, mm-hmm. junk mail. So you have about one out of eight people who are so identified will lose their vote. We're talking Kobach's anti-alien voter thing is going to cost about 1 in 7 new voters at least. We're talking about 3 million voters that are
wow.
going to lose their right to vote if
wow.
Kobach's plans go through, including that census question and his voter proof requirement. Those two things, you put them together, and that's 3 million votes. He knows it, but he will say because there are 3 million aliens on the voter rolls. So that's his justification.
He was the one who told Donald Trump that there were 3 million so-called illegal aliens who voted in the general election, which accounts for him losing the popular vote.
And the double voters and the alien voters. And look, if you go to my site, you'll also see a little cartoon that's taken from our film where we talk about Kobach and his alien voters and we make fun of it. We have, you know, these space aliens coming out of a spaceship wearing Hillary for President hats. But I make a joke out of it, but because if I don't, I'm just going to burst into tears.
Right.
That's the problem. People, please understand, Cambridge Analytica grabbing your Facebook page, that's the tip of the evil berg. You know,
mm-hmm.
you have to understand, that's nothing compared to the rest of the database operatives. These guys are amateurs, and especially I know because I work with Channel 4 and BBC television, and I do undercover reporting, which is not done in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And The Guardian and Channel 4 went undercover to get the information
right.
on Cambridge. And, so these guys don't even know how to cover themselves up and check who's talking to them or anything. It's not so easy to do with Koch and Themis and Karl Rove. These guys know what they're doing. I get their inside documents, but I'm really well. I have really good training at this, but these guys are really serious, dangerous operators. And you can cancel your Facebook page, but baby, you ain't canceling the Koch brothers' Themis machine.
No, because they're so dug in that they have records of whatever you do, wherever you go. You leave
your credit card. You're going to cancel your credit card now? Look at those 12 pages that you hit the I accept button when you applied, right?
Right.
Do you ever read those?
Never.
You know? Okay. You just said they can sell your information to any creepster who's willing to pony up the money for your data.
And creepster, you know, it is. You've been warning us for years about Paul Singer. So a lot of people don't realize that we heard about Cambridge Analytica and the infamous dossier, which that was first paid for by Paul Singer, wasn't it?
Yes. If that dossier – oh, and by the way, let me connect some dots for you.
Okay.
The Karl Rove's Evil Data Trust is paid for by Paul Singer, a billionaire otherwise known as the Vulture.
Right.
You'll meet him in my film.
Yes.
And so the Vulture's paid for that for the Karl Rove Data Trust. But in addition, he's the guy who paid for the Steele dossier.
Right.
It wasn't Trump. It was it wasn't Hillary.
No.
It was trying to get the stuff on Trump. It was this Republican who he didn't like Trump. He and Trump didn't get along.
No, he now was for Ted buddy, Cruz, right?
Buddy.
He was doing this for Ted Cruz.
Well, actually, his the Vulture's candidate was Marco Rubio.
Oh.
And he thought, well, that'll get the youth vote. Can you imagine? Yeah. You can just see Rubio rocking out to the dead Kennedys.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah, he's the youth vote, right? But anyway, he was afraid of Trump because also Trump, just so you understand, this is very important, the Mercer billionaires are behind Cambridge Analytica. You notice I'm mentioning billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
Billionaires behind Data Trust, billionaires behind Themis, billionaires behind Cambridge. And by the way, the Kochs are behind Chris Kobach. Why the billionaires? Because you don't steal votes to steal elections. You steal votes to steal money. They don't care, Republican, Democrat. None of this matters. Donald Trump was a threat to the Mercers and to Paul Singer, the Vulture, because they are facing major multi-billion-dollar tax bills because of Donald Trump's statement that he was going to close the billionaire's favorite loophole called carried interest.
Right.
That would have hit the Mercer's company for $7 billion. Like that?
Mm-hmm.
It would have hit Paul Singer personally for $1 billion. Now, that's a lot of money on the table. So
yep.
They were afraid of Trump that he would actually carry out his populist program. Once Trump got the nomination and won, when Trump won the nomination, the Mercers switched to him and said he had to as a condition of their funding his campaign. Because remember, Trump is not a billionaire. He plays one on TV. He was desperate
right.
for money.
Right.
The Mercers said they'd fund his campaign if he accepted Cambridge Analytica and Steve Bannon. Then, after he got elected, Paul Singer was in his office having a private meeting. How do I know? Because Trump blasted it out at a press conference. He says, you know who's in my office? Paul Singer, and not one U.S. reporter said, what is the Vulture doing in the Oval Office? The answer was to make sure that they don't close that loophole. He had his big tax reform.
And they didn't.
Mr. Big Mouth,
yep.
I'm gonna close the loophole. Didn't close the loophole.
Nope.
He opened it up.
Yep.
There you go.
Wow. So he's doing their bidding left and right. And in the process, he's stealing our votes.
Yeah, to do just that. Basically, they're stealing your vote because they know. You do the math. There's the 99% and there's the 1%. You know, who wins if you have a fair election? It's not much of a contest if everyone gets the vote. And so, therefore, they have to stop, especially voters of color. And these tricks are all aimed at voters of color, the un-Americans on the voter rolls. And well, some of it, like, for example, that citizenship requirement, by the way, is not aimed at, for example, Mexican-Americans. It's actually aimed at young voters who vote Democratic, because when they go to register to vote, they don't have a passport or
right.
they don't have their
right.
birth certificate, which, you know, their mother lost in a, you know, in the garage or something. So what's happened is that it's young voters under attack. They're again that a group that's vulnerable, that's Democratic and vulnerable. Yeah, but it's all about stealing your money, stealing your wallet. You know, if they can, they're going to privatize Social Security. And by the way, and by the way, privatized the army. You know, Betsy DeVos, our Secretary of Education, her brother is the wonderful Eric Prince, who actually gave up his U.S. citizenship to avoid prosecution, lives in Dubai. But he actually met with Trump and suggested basically that his private army take over our nastier military functions.
Right. Right. No, that's true. For those who don't know, he is proposing that a private mercenary force go in and take over in Afghanistan.
Yeah. And so we're going to privatize the military. We're again, that's a billion. The DeVos's and Prince are a billionaire family. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know that. The other is and obviously the Kochs are worth about, you know, depends who's counting, $80 billion between the two of them.
Right.
And, you know, and they are not all big fans of Donald Trump. None of these people. The Kochs really despise Trump, but they don't care. As long as they can buy him and manipulate him and get what they want.
Right. And he's easily manipulatable. You just have to flatter him in the right way and agree with what he says, or make him think that you're agreeing with what he says, and you win him over. The whole thing, the carried interest that you were talking about, that was a big deal during the campaign, and it just disappeared during that tax bill.
Yes. I mean, Trump said, it's so unfair. It's so unfair. And, you know, with his little finger in the air. And he used this line, he's going to close that loophole, not once or twice. He used it in almost every one of those stump speeches when he went out with his big crowds. Because the big crowds are the yobs who are getting fleeced by the billionaires. And he was saying, you know, I'm going to bring these billionaires down. You know, Hillary Clinton wouldn't touch these billionaires, which is true. Fair game.
Mm-hmm.
But, so he made all these promises to the poor schmucks in the trucks, and once he was elected, it's like, you know, who are they? The hell with them.
Right. You know, you brought up the Carlos, how do you say his name, Merguia?
Merguia.
Merguia, who is a Kansas-born judge who presided over a nearby courtroom. How did Kris Kobach get around that? Did they identify who he was and say to him, no, he is not, in fact, a so-called alien? He's a U.S. judge?
Well, the first thing is he hasn't – Florida, by the way, tried that trick. But actually going through finding Mexican-American names or Hispanic names and challenging mm-hmm. their right to vote, requiring people to go into courtrooms to prove that they were voters. They hadn't gotten that far in Kansas yet, because the federal judge had blocked Kobach. The only thing that he was doing – not when I say only, it's not minor. He blocked one out of seven new voters for not having the citizenship documents, basically the passport or birth certificate. One in seven new voters. Think of that, those numbers. We get about 24 million new voters registering or people re-registering a year, about 24 million. So you're talking about 3 million who would be blocked under that rule. And then once they then get that, because under the same guise, there's aliens on the voter rolls.
Right.
Then you go after people who are already on the voter rolls, like Carlos Merguia, who Kobach claims has an un-American name. I mean, you have to understand, the judge was close to throwing the gavel at his head. But not if he knows he's going to a Supreme Court that looks like him.
Yeah. So he's just biding his time. So Greg Palast, the logical question is, what can we do? It sounds like all the decks, the cards are stacked against us, and we're just screwed.
Well, kind of watch this space. No, two things. In a general rule, if you watch my film, you say, how do you win? I mean,
right.
How did Martin Luther King win? He didn't have the money. He didn't have the vote.
Right.
You know, he's trying to get the vote from black folk. He didn't have anything. But he had, you know, marching feet and mm-hmm. and people deciding to vote even if they were being threatened with their life. In other words, they can't be – and here's the simple truth. They can't steal all the votes all the time.
Right.
They just can't. They steal about – in fact, Bobby Kennedy and I used to teach statistics, and we did a pretty careful analysis. About 5.9 million or so votes get stolen in a presidential election, and the last one a little bit more. And they can't. You just have to win by 55%, not by 51%.
Mm-hmm.
And that means you just, no matter when they tell you can't vote, you have to protect your vote. Make sure that, register and register and register again. Keep checking your registration online. And the other thing is get active. And by the way, if you go to gregpalace.com, watch the space. I'm not allowed to say the details right now. I'm working with the ACLU. I'm working with Jesse Jackson. But Chris Kobach is going to have another lawsuit in his face, and he's going to have, and not only that, but the 30 Republican secretaries of state are about to face litigation based on the documentation I have.
Wow.
And we're going to fight them in the courtrooms. We're going to fight them at the ballot boxes. And we're going to do whatever it takes so that people have the right to vote. It's not Republican or Democrat. It's right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been from, the beginning of our country started out with fights over who gets to vote, who has the right to vote, and we're still going to fight that. And 100 years from now, and I hope you're still with us, we'll be fighting this fight again, because it's a non-ending fight, because it's not about the right to vote by itself. It's about us and them. Vote suppression is class war by other means.
Do you think they're nervous, given the newly found activism of all the young people, as witnessed last weekend during the March for Our Lives?
Yeah, they're scared of that, because what they're afraid of, they're hoping it'll dissipate.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Women's March or something, where the first Women's March didn't have a particular direction. It was a wonderful expression, but the second one, there was a focus on getting people to vote, to register to vote, to lobby, to get active. I think with the young people getting involved in the gun thing, that's going to be very important, because the biggest one of the things that destroyed Hillary Clinton, besides vote suppression, and if you watch my film, the new version of my film, which just came out, Trump stole the vote in the key states like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Arizona. But they only got close enough to steal because a million students did not come out to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And in Wisconsin, you had 50,000, and Michigan, you had 50,000 students in those two states who had the right to vote, but either didn't register or registered and didn't vote in the general. A lot of them, frankly, because they're Bernie supporters who said the hell with it. But I think the gun thing that kids are now going to say, we'd better vote. We may not be thrilled about every candidate, but we better vote, and we're going to demand that candidates take particular positions on these things. And because they're a movement and not just a set of voters, what I'm hoping is that they'll hold the politicians accountable after they're elected, because Trump is the ultimate example. Like I say, he told all the obs, I'm going to close those billionaire loopholes. Instead, he invited the billionaires into his office literally to rewrite the tax bill in their favor.
Right.
And so it's about getting your candidates elected, but also making sure that once they're elected, they don't shaft you.
Right, and these kids seem to have that goal in mind. They're really holding Marco Rubio accountable already. I'm down here in Florida, and so I'm seeing it perhaps more than others. But they've taken Marco Rubio to task, which is a good thing.
You saw. I mean, even Rick Scott, who sleeps in a coffin. He thrives on the blood of innocents.
Uh-huh.
But Rick Scott has signed a gun safety bill, and that is that's not minor stuff, especially in Florida. That's big stuff, and that is the opening. And the other thing, when people get a taste of people power, they want more of it. We saw that the civil rights movement. The success of the civil rights movement led to the ultimate success of the anti-war movement. If it weren't for the organizers who the knowledge and history of success, how you win, and the sense of winning that led from one movement to the next, led to the women's movement. All these successes, one success led to another, because people suddenly feel like, hey, maybe I can make a difference. But you only make a difference when you're joining with others. There's no, you know, easy path. There's no, you know, like even a lawsuit that we, you know, even when we file a lawsuit, we know that it's as much the political pressure and PR and public pressure we can put on that go with these suits that make things happen. You know, you can't just file a suit anymore, especially with the Supreme Court. You have to put on public pressure. Mm-hmm. We can do it.
Right. And these kids are showing the way to do it. The whole thing with Laura Ingraham right now is beautiful. It's showing that the public is on the side of these kids, and you diss one of them for something, you know, you're bullying them. And people are not liking that. This proposed boycott of advertisers, with all these advertisers pulling out of Laura Ingraham's show. That's a big deal. Does it signal to you maybe a turning of the tide that maybe people are getting more engaged and they're not going to stand for it?
Yeah, I think what happened was is that especially young people got whipped up by Bernie's campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he didn't win, it's like, politics is a con, you know, and there's no point. Well, there is a point, and you can't always win. Especially when when it's stacked against you, you know, whatever you think of the Russians or WikiLeaks or anything else, they didn't write those memos.
Right.
You know, the DNC really went out to shaft Bernie. You know,
yep.
And this is bad. But yep. You can't say we don't like the rules of the game, so we're not going to play. That's okay, except that they're going to get you. I mean, if you're drowning in student debt. If you're if you can't get a mortgage to buy a home because you're young and they require 300% down payment, all these things affect you, and in California we're facing a disaster because when we say you can't deduct local taxes from your taxes, you're really saying that the federal government can tax the tax. That's why it was deductible. You're not supposed to tax a tax, but it's deliberately aimed at killing these blue states. It's a fixed game. So what? You know, they'll just have to the field is not level.
Right.
So what? It wasn't level for Martin Luther King when he crossed the bridge at Selma. I watched this in my film. When he crossed the bridge at Selma, it was. You know, they're facing – four people were murdered on that
mm-hmm.
march, okay? Four people were murdered on that march. I didn't say it was going to be easy, but I don't think we have to worry about being murdered on this march. I think we do have to march.
Right. And so the best thing to do is as you mentioned, Greg Palast, get out there, make sure that you are registered to vote. And that means not just checking once. You need to keep checking to make sure that they're not doing anything nefarious and removing you from the voting rolls, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can check on – it's funny. I was telling people how to do it in California on a radio show, and I checked my own registration, said no such registration.
Oh.
Greg Palast is not here. So I did something simple. I re-registered online. There's all kinds of reasons, both evil and technical, why you get knocked off.
Mm-hmm.
And when you guys got guys like Chris Kobach trolling the voter rolls, there's all kinds of reasons why they're going to knock you off, and you say, I've been voting in the same place 20 years. So what? You better check your registration about three, four months before an election so you can re-register. And by the way, I know people like to register on those weird little paper forms and motor voter and all that. Register online because it will confirm it right there. About 45% of paper registrations never get added to the voter rolls. Surprise?
Wow. Is that vote
45%?
Vote.gov or vote.org?
So you go to, I think there's a lot of sites, how do I register online? Usually it's your Secretary of State's office for each state. I know that's true for Secretary of State of Florida and your county your county clerk in county supervisor's office in Florida. There's many other, it's all different in different states. It's easy
Got
to
it.
Google. and go and register online. If you're not, check if your registration's there. You can do that.
Yep.
And check online.
All right.
But and then go out and register other people. Check other people. You know, by the way, registrations are public. You don't need to you don't need a Russian hacker to find out who's registered. Check if your mom's registered.
There you go.
Check
Greg
if your
Palace
cousin's registered and say you're off if you're not on. Right?
Thank you, Greg Palace. We're just out of time. As always, I appreciate your information more than I can adequately express.